Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 776 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Valiant Sunday episode, and today I'm going to be continuing the chronology with Harbinger number 10. But before I dive into the issue, a word about the upcoming WonderCon convention in Anaheim, California.
Just a quick reminder that the Comic Source will be at WonderCon in Anaheim, California on March 29th, 30th, and 31st. We'll be bringing you live coverage of the convention with photos, live tweeting of panels, creator interviews, cosplay, and more. Also, we'll be having giveaways throughout the weekends for fans attending the convention. We have tons of lanyards to give away, as well as at least one lucky winner each day can win an iPad full of comics. So be sure you're following us on Twitter and Instagram all weekend to join in the fun and win some awesome swag.
All right, hope to see a lot of you there. I know Valiant will be there. They will be exhibiting with a Collector's Paradise, one of the stores from Southern California that's a huge Valiant supporter. They will also have several panels there. So I imagine on next week's Valiant Sunday, we'll probably have some either some creator interviews or some panel coverage or something like that for all of you Valiant fans to check out. I'm hoping to talk to some of the staff there and maybe get some news, some more information for you about what's coming up later in the year for Valiant. So be sure you are following us on social media, as I mentioned, to find out when we are covering those panels, interviews, all that kind of good stuff. So let me go ahead and dive into the issue here. As I said, we're continuing the chronology with Harbinger number 10. It's written by Joshua Dysart. We have quite a few artists working on this particular book. Matthew Clark, Alvaro Martinez, Demi Macheros, and Brian Thies. Inks are by Stefano Guadiano. Colors by Ian Hannon, and letters are by Rob Steen. If you remember last time, there was a surprise attack by Project Rising Spirit, with Dull Tull leading the way just as the Renegades were recruiting or attempting to recruit another member. And they were successful. PRS was successful in capturing Peter by using an image projection to make him think Tull was in a helicopter. And when Peter got inside the helicopter, he was tranked by, 100 trank darts. And once he went down, it was pretty easy for PRS to take out everybody else, but Faith was not with the team. She was further away, keeping lookout in the forest, and was able to find where Peter was and squeeze into the little trailer he was in, where he was hooked up to some sort of machine that put his brain waves in an alpha loop and didn't allow him to concentrate or use his powers. So at the end of last issue, we saw that Faith, as I said, had gone into the trailer. She'd removed the electrodes from Peter's head, and he was struggling to regain some sense of coherent thought. So this issue is actually narrated by Peter. It's the first time we're getting to hear from him in a little while in his thoughts. And he's saying, "Here I am, Peter Stanchek in a nutshell, prone to losing my head," right? He's fully aware that he does that. Like, forget about the powers. He doesn't have great impulse control. And so he's talking about feeling like an animal snared in a loop, and there's no real progression of thought. Again, this alpha pattern that his brain is stuck in doesn't really allow him to concentrate. So he says every now and then something will break through the vision, and we know that's when he actually sees somebody. Somebody actually comes in and talks to them here. It's something happening in the real world, and it kind of breaks through to some extent, but not enough for him to really concentrate on it. So we see that he sees Dull Tull come in and talk about how his memory's been wiped over and over. But mostly what Pete sees as he's in this sort of trance-like state is he sees Joe, right? His best friend Joe, who's no longer around anymore. And he says, "I also see someone else, someone I've seen before, back when I broke into Rachel's mind. It's the monk who bleeds." And when he has this vision of the monk, what the monk tells him is to go west. So is that the monk psychically sending Peter a message? Is it Pete's subconscious? We're just not really sure. But what we do know is that Pete is starting to sort of regain his focus. And he says, once again, Faith saves him, right? Pulls him out of the dark well. And she's here and she's real. And she's trying to get Pete to concentrate, be able to talk. Saying, Pete, talk to me. They have Charlene and Chris. And Pete's thinking how his whole head feels like it's full of sludge. Thinks about how he could really use some Dexedrine right now. Because if anything, Pete, up till now in his life, he's really believed in a better living through chemistry, right? He's stayed high as a kite for days on end, and it's a way for him to escape and drown out the noise he hears, all the static that he's grown up hearing in his head from being able to sense other people's thoughts. But that's not possible, right? He doesn't have access to that right now. So instead, what he says is, Faith, I'm in no condition to fight. I can't even stand up. And Faith's like, well, I don't want to hear that. We don't have a choice. And then she hears a noise. She peeks outside the window and sees that the helicopter transports have arrived to take the renegades away. And she tells Pete, you know, there's no more time. They're here. We got to go. And Pete's saying, I just don't know. They have all this technology. They have all these soldiers. And Faith's like, well, what are you saying? Are you just going to give up? Like, at least let's go down fighting. And Pete thinks about it for a second. He says, no, listen, here's what we're going to do. Strip the wires on the electrodes and then put them back on my head so it'll look like I'm still under the trance. I'm still hooked up to the machine. And then when I'm ready, we'll make a break for it. And you just follow close behind and be ready when I make my move and you can swoop in and help. You know, once we're in the clear and I feel a little more stable. And Faith's like, well, what if we're never in the clear? But Pete doesn't even have time to answer. The soldiers show up. They take Pete and the other renegades into the helicopters. Pete gets his own transport, whereas Charlene Dupree or Flamingo, Chris Hathaway, and the newly recruited Torque, get their own transport. And Pete's thinking as they're being loaded up, you know, what am I doing here? You know, I understand the chain of events. You know, I'm not speaking like that. I'm just in a more metaphysical sort of way, right? A more philosophical kind of way. What am I doing? I'm no part of a team. You know, I'm a runaway. I'm a drug addict. I've been institutionalized. I've been corporatized. You know, people have been after me my whole life. What am I doing here? And how did I get involved with these other people? They're not the problem. You know, they're not the ones being chased. How did I get them involved in this? This is not fair to them. So as Pete is pondering this, Chris and Charlene see that Pete looks totally out of it being loaded into the other helicopter. And Charlene's really worried, saying, without him, we're dead. We have no hope of escape. And I love what Chris says here. You can sum Chris up perfectly with this one sentence, right? First, she tells Charlene to be quiet and keep her head. But then she says something else that, as I mentioned, it completely sums up who Chris is. She says, we die plotting. We are not going to give up. We are going to keep fighting, even if that means just using our minds, looking for a way out. You know, Chris doesn't have any superpowers. This is what she can do, you know, try to think her way out of this problem. She's not going to give up. No matter what happens, we die plotting. So I love that line. That's a great line that sums up so succinctly who Chris Hathaway is. So perfect line from Joshua Dysart there. Meanwhile, Torkelson is still struggling, trying to understand what's been happening. You know, he's been thrown into the deep end of the pool, doesn't understand any of this. Part of his mind still thinks he's in his imaginary place of Torkala. He's like, I'm not supposed to hurt in Torkala. What's going on? And he wants to be sure the soldiers don't let the other girl see him cry. You know, he's still so worried about appearances. So meanwhile, in the first transport, Pete is, as I said, still hooked up to the machine. And they believe him to be knocked out still under this trance-like state. But they want to be sure. So they have a doctor there. And Toll tells the doctor to check and make sure that he's still under. And we see as the doctor goes to examine Pete. His eyes are rolled back. He's still drooling, but we know he's faking, right? But we see a little twinkle in his eye and the same twinkle in the doctor's eye. Clearly, Pete is using his powers on the doctor because he needs the doctor to say, yes, he's still out of it. And indeed, he does. So then they turn on the containment field and prepare to take off. And Pete's thinking, still trying to understand, still questioning himself, why did I drag everybody into this? Was it pride? Was it ego? Or did he really do it all for a girl? You know, we know that he has romantic feelings for Chris Hathaway, and he wanted to make up for what he did to her, for taking advantage of her. So as we see the two helicopters take off, Faith is following, and they haven't been in the air very long, and Pete starts to feel like he's getting his focus back. The containment field that Pete is in is effective. It can contain him, but it's nothing like the machine that they had him rigged up to before, where he couldn't even think, right? So whether he's ready to or not, the post-hypnotic suggestion that he planted in the doctor's head pops off, which basically the doctor grabs a gun from one of the soldiers, and he knows exactly where to shoot the containment machine to basically sabotage it. And as soon as he does that, he's grabbed by the soldiers, but it's already too late. Tull immediately realizes what's going on. Pete must have somehow gotten control of the doctor, but by that time, it's too late. Pete's able to use his powers to extricate himself from the machine. And unfortunately for the PRS soldiers, they have these helmets on that protect them from any sort of mind control, protect them from Pete doing anything to their mind. So he doesn't have a choice. He's forced to do something else instead, which I don't know. He says he unleashes his inner scream, and he basically lobotomizes these 10 men. There's a lot of blood and pain involved, and luckily, the pilots don't have the same helmets. They're obviously very expensive, and so Pete's able to let the pilots know or show the pilots an illusion that makes them believe that everything is okay. So the helicopter keeps flying. And Tull says, all right, here we are. We meet again. And every time we meet, you kill people. And Pete's like, you can't put that on me, right? If you'd stop chasing me, I'd stop killing people. You're not giving me any choice. And Tull's like, but you never kill me. Why is that, I wonder? And I love this. Pete's like, oh, PRS never told you? All this time I thought you knew. I don't kill you because you're my father. And Tull just kind of like, what? You're my son? You know, he doesn't totally lose it. Because, you know, he doesn't have the capacity for emotion anymore because Pete's wiped him so many times. But he is buying it for a second, and Pete's like, nah, I'm just screwing with you, you know, straight out of Star Wars. So Pete then contacts Faith and says, okay, I've got control of our transport. We're good. But I'm worried that PRS will kill the others if they realize that I have control of this transport. So what I need you to do is sneak aboard and free the others. And then I can handle the situation from there. And Faith is like, wait a second, what? They have machine guns. And Pete's like, I understand that, but it's something you have to do. I can't do this without you. And so Faith's like, I don't even know how I'm going to get on that thing. So Pete reaches into the pilot's mind, and he gathers the information about these helicopters, and he tells her, okay, there's a hatch on the belly of the helicopter with an exterior release. So you can get in that way. But as soon as you open it, everyone on board will know. And so Faith, you know, ever the team member, ever the believer that she can do it, she's scared out of her mind, but she's going to do this for Peter. As she attempts to board the helicopter, she's telling Peter, you know, I'm really starting to feel sick to my stomach. And Pete says, you know, I know it's scary, but I promise you, we just need to get everybody safe, and then we can quit. This Renegades thing was a bad idea. We can all go our separate ways. But right now, I need you to be part of this team. You're part of this team, right, Faith? And Faith, again, just like Chris was summed up with that We Die Plotting, Faith is sort of summed up here, saying, are you kidding me? I am this team. And so she does manage to sneak on board and kind of knock over one of the guards, which allows Chris Hathaway to grab his gun and start firing at the rest of the guards as they dive for cover. She yells out to Faith to get the helmet off of Torkelson. As soon as she does, he has his psychic projection of the larger guy, that the shell or what have you, the psychic projection that has super strength and invulnerability and all that. So once he's free, he starts wreaking havoc on the helicopter. We're privy to Pete's thoughts again as he's thinking that the only thing that ever really had value in his life was his best friend Joe. And he's thinking back to when they were in the Pittsburgh State Mental Hospital together, when Joe was the only one who could really see that there was something different about him. And we get this scene where Joe bribes Pete with a candy bar to help him beat somebody at ping pong. Pete's thinking about how he probably would have killed himself a long time ago if it wasn't for Joe's friendship. Well, Joe's friendship and the pills, right? He's not going to lie. He really loved the pills. So Joe became the best ping pong player in the entire Pennsylvania State Hospital circuit. And it was the only person that wasn't afraid of Pete, or at least that's how Pete felt. But the guilt is there because now Joe's dead and Pete feels responsible because he feels like he couldn't take care of them. So that's why they're all there, right? All of them. Those who knew him and those who didn't. And he's gone and made the same mistake that he made with Joe all over again. He's made the mistake of having people close to him that are going to be put in danger because of what happened, because of knowing Pete and what happened with the Harbinger Foundation. So on board the helicopter, now that Torque is loose, he's able to basically rip all the guards to shreds. Charlene, for her part, looks like she's in shock. Doesn't really help out a whole heck of a lot. And Pete, still thinking about how he's led everybody into the heart of madness, so to speak. And he feels like he shouldn't be doing that. He, you know, if he lets people into his life and begins to trust them, and then bad things happen. So it looks like Faith and her team have secured their helicopter as well. But unfortunately, the pilots set the self-destruct and bail out. And Pete hears this over the radio and tells Faith that they need to bail, basically. They're going to blow you up. You got to get out of there. So once Faith relays that information, Chris is like, okay, we got no choice. We're jumping out the back. And Charlene's like, what? She's like, yeah, you understand the principle of Newton's third law, right? I know you know how to thrust. Come on. And they jump out of the helicopter. So Faith is obviously okay. She can fly. But the rest, what's going to happen? We'll have to see. So Pete's like, well, I don't have a choice either. I'm not going to let my friends die. I'm going to have to try to do whatever I can to save them. So he gives the pilots of his transport a mental command to take themselves out, and he jumps out the back. Then we see the second transport explode, and right before the explosion can harm her, Pete is able to catch Chris Hathaway, so she's safe, and she tells Pete, you know, I knew you were okay. Thank God you're alive. Meanwhile, Faith is trying to grab Charlene, saying, save me. But they're too high and they're falling too fast. And Faith's powers, you know, are still relatively new. She doesn't know how to use them anywhere near as well as she can now, where she can even project her field that allows her to fly now. That would be no problem. But again, these are early days. And so they continue to fall. And Chris is imploring Peter to help them. And Pete's like, I'm trying to use my powers to help them, but it's not working. And so Charlene thinks, well, Faith, you've got to let me go. I'm just going to take you down with me. But Faith is not about to give up on Charlene. That's just not who Faith is, right? She thinks of herself as a hero. She's not going to let her friend fall to her death. But Charlene, in her own ways, is heroic as well. And she sends out a little burst of flame that surprises Faith and causes Faith to let go of Charlene's hand, right? Almost like getting an electrical shock. And as Charlene starts to fall, she thinks thrust, 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 thrust. And as she gets close to the ground, she does manage to create thrust. She does manage to create some lift by firing a bunch of flames down at the ground. And she does hit the ground pretty hard. She bounces once. But she's okay, and she's very excited about it as she's screaming out, yes, yes, suck it, bad guys, I'm alive, Isaac Newton in the house. And then as she's standing there, beginning to regain her feet, surrounded by this little fire that she's created that was started by the thrust that she created, she hears a scream above her, looks up and sees that Torkelson is falling at a very fast rate, screaming at the top of his lungs. So Charlene beats a hasty retreat before Torkelson can land on her and basically obliterate her. And Torkelson lands on the ground with a giant whoom. And luckily for the renegades, the force of his impact snuffs out the fire that Charlene had just started. Also takes out quite a bit of vegetation in that area, creates a pretty big crater. So they're not even sure he's alive, the rest of the renegades. And so as they head over to Torkelson, he regains consciousness. And he's again thinking, what the heck's going on? It's not supposed to hurt in Torkala. What happened? And Charlene says, well, we just jumped out of a helicopter. We all did it, and it was wicked. And Torkelson says, oh, wow, you're pretty. To which Charlene, and maybe this is summoning Charlene up in a one little sentence here. She says, I know, it's a burden. So Tork turns to Pete and asks if it's real. And Pete's like, yeah, it's real. Now, can you walk? We need to get out of here, like, right now. And he is able to stand up and walk. So they find a road nearby. Pete uses his powers so they can carjack somebody. And they feel really bad about it. Pete says, I'm so sorry for jacking your ride, but we're going to give you more money than it's worth. And you won't even remember owning it. So I imagine they just leave the guy on the side of the road with a bunch of cash that's in the bag that Faith retrieved from their car when she switched into the Harbinger uniform. And they find a nearby hotel, and they finally get to catch their breath for the first time in quite a while. So now that they're safe, this is kind of the moment Pete's been waiting for. And the first words out of his mouth are, I'm so sorry. And he tells them that this is too crazy, that him and Chris came up with this idea, and maybe they lost their heads. As Pete said, or was thinking earlier in the issue, he's prone to doing that. And he tells the rest of them that this is not the end, right? They're going to keep coming for them. They're not going to stop. And if they split up, maybe Pete can draw the people chasing them away from the rest, right? He can draw all the heavies after him because he's really the one that they want. They may still go after the others just because they're aware that Pete exists. But if they split up, Pete feels like the others won't be in the same level of danger that they have been in. And so once he's said his piece, he walks out because he can't look Chris in the eyes anymore. He feels so terrible about what's happened, especially what he did to her back in issue one. So with the final thought that Pete's just happy everyone's okay, he steps outside of the motel room to give everyone a chance to make their decision. And he's thinking about how badly he wants to get high right now. It's been over 2 months, and he's like, if I'm being honest, being straight sucks, right? I don't have a good excuse. He never needed the pills the way Joe needed the pills to help like balance his brain chemistry. Joe had schizophrenia. Pete never really needed the pills. He used them as a crutch. He used them to escape himself. It was easier to get high and use drugs to drown out the static that he would hear in his head rather than sort of face it and try to control his powers. It was easier just to slide into oblivion. And he thinks about how the first thing he'd do is give Torkelson some Oxycontin for his emotional and his physical pain. And Pete, of course, would be happy to join him with the Oxy. And he's thinking about how even Torkelson's psychic projection is showing that it's banged up, that it's wounded. So that's got to hurt if even your psychic projection shows injury. Next up, he thinks about how he'd want Chris to take some Xanax with him so they could spend a perfect day together. No troubles, no worries. Again, just a way to numb themselves and have fun, high as kites. And he thinks about how when they were in New Orleans recruiting Charlene, he thought about sneaking away to score some ketamine, which is a horse tranquilizer, also something that will get you really high. And he thinks, but I didn't. Why didn't I? Right? What held me back from doing that? And Pete is self-aware enough to know it's not because he's into clean living now, or he somehow has found himself and he sees his potential, you know, like the way Faith sees potential in him or sees potential in herself, thinks he can be some kind of superhero or any of that crap. You know, he's no role model. No, he doesn't go back to the pills because of Chris. Chris is the one that inspires him. He feels like she deserves more from Pete. And again, Pete is trying to make up for what he did to her. So as Pete is standing outside of the motel room, Chris comes out and says, "Hey, Pete, everybody's talking about what you said. You need to come back inside it and see what they want you to see." And as Pete turns around and starts to head back in, he says, "Wait, you're wearing a Harbinger Foundation jacket. Let me guess, it was also in the bag that Faith's been carrying around?" And when he walks inside, he sees that they're all wearing the jackets. And Pete realizes that they all deserve more from him. It's not just Chris that does. After what he's put them through, they do deserve more from Peter. And that's what's going to keep him sober. He wasn't there for Joe. He was high. He was stupid. He was selfish. And this is his new family. And he's here now for them. And he's got to hope that that counts for something. He's got to hope that matters and that it in some way makes up for the mistakes he's made. So next, all hell breaks loose in Harbinger Wars. So we're going to dive into the first Harbinger War crossover. Before we do that, we'll switch the chronology over to the first few issues of Bloodshot, which came out in 2012 with Dwayne Szczerzinski writing. Bloodshot's my favorite Valiant character, so I'm really excited to go back and read those early issues. I haven't read them in a really, really long time. Maybe since they came out. I'm not really sure. I don't remember, but we're done with Harbinger for now. So we've covered Exo Manowar. We've covered Harbinger for the first 10 issues. Now we're going to switch over to Bloodshot. So look for that on our next chronology episode. As I said, it probably won't be next weekend. Next weekend will probably be WonderCon coverage of all things Valiant. So looking forward to bringing you that from the show. So hope you guys enjoyed this one. Again, Harbinger, I feel, is one of the best sequential stories ever. I think Joshua Dysart does an amazing job. Right now, currently, Valiant has just released the first issue of Life and Death of Toyo Harada, which is sort of the final piece of the puzzle of this overall story that Joshua Dysart has been telling, beginning in the Harbinger with the 25 issues of that, going into Imperium for 16 issues, and now we're on Life and Death of Toyo Harada for Joshua to wrap up the story. But again, it's incredible storytelling. It's incredibly nuanced. Even though it's, 7, 8 years old now, it still really holds up. These are kids. They're in over their head. They're not superheroes. And that is constantly embraced. This isn't the last time these teenagers are going to make mistakes. And again, it makes sense in context of the story, right? They're learning on the job. It's on the job training for a job no one's ever had before, right? How do we go up against the Harbinger Foundation? How do we take out Toyo Harada, this guy who's as powerful, if not more powerful than Pete, and has been doing this for a really long time? You know, you want to talk about plotting, right? The Harbinger's Foundation has Toyo Harada to do their plotting. The Renegades have Chris. Chris is somewhat of a genius, but I don't know that you'd put her on the level of Harada because he has the powers, he has the intelligence, and he has the life experience. And that's really where it makes the difference here. And I love the fact that these characters keep trying despite the fact that they're often in over their head. It's what makes us as readers root for them, because despite the fact that Faith is kind of the only one that espouses these ideals, they all to some extent exemplify it. None of them give up. They all keep trying. They all feel like a family. And to see them come together and the skill with which Joshua Dysart explores the dynamics and the friendships and the bonds that form, it's just really, really great storytelling. It's why anybody who's interested in getting into comics, they're like, I have no idea where to start. I have no idea what to read. I want to read a comic that's really good. You know, give me something. There's usually 3 or 4 series that I'll give people. Harbinger's always one of them, along with probably like Ultimate Spider-Man, maybe the clone series from Image, written by David Schulner. That's another favorite of mine. So there's a lot of great sequential storytelling out there, great comic book stories, and this is one of them. It's really incredible storytelling, and It's part of the reason I hope the Bloodshot movie does so well for Sony next year, because I think the second film in the Harbinger universe that will see the light of day would be Harbinger. And I think that if done right, this can be absolutely incredible. So again, really encourage you to go and read these Harbinger issues if you haven't done so yet. And you'll have time to catch up before we get to Harbinger Wars. Because as I said, we're done with Harbinger for now. We've covered the first 10 issues. And now we're going to move over to Bloodshot. So
thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The Comic Source is a member of the LRM Podcast Network, so when you visit the site, be sure to check out some of our other podcasts like Los Fanboys, our official movie and TV podcast hosted by Joseph Jammer Medina, Netflix and Chill, hosted by Nick and Carrie, covering a wide variety of film and television topics with Game of Thrones and Star Wars as particular favorites, and finally, Mike and Mark's Marvelous Adventures, as these two former athletes share their love of sports and geek culture by chatting about anything and everything sports and geek related. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.